Yo, thanks for downloading my new podcast. It's called From the Internet, where I'm going to chat to people who have come into my existence or me knowing they exist from the internet. So some of these guests you'll hear me chatting to, I'll be chatting to them for the very first time on the podcast, despite the fact that I may have potentially been tweeting them or Facebooking them or whatever for years. So with that in mind, some of them will probably be pretty awkward, I reckon, because, you know, it's awkward. You just meet a person for the first time in real life. Today, not so awkward, though. I'm chatting to a wedding celebrant, Josh Withers. Now, he's a former engineer, former radio announcer, and someone I know from the internet. We've been tweeting each other for years, and sometimes he pops on our show here in Western Australia to talk about weddings if anything media related comes up. But on this podcast, we're chatting about radio, media personalities, and then personalities who are experts, which I guess Josh is now. He's a wedding expert on a lot of different outlets, and how weddings for him went from a bit of like a weekend cash job, I guess, to now a full-time business. So my name's Ryan John. This is From the Internet and episode one with Josh Withers. When people say, "Oh, Josh, nice to meet you. What do you do? What do you say?"
I give people jewelry and I make them kiss. That's all.
What if you met them at a party? Would you still do the same thing and not at work?
I'd say it in a sleazier way. Like, yeah, I make people kiss and give each other jewelry. I'm a really weird kind of pimp.
That's really cool. You should put that whole line on your business card.
Well, you know what? Twitter analytics. So that's the bit where you can see like who views what on Twitter. I hadn't opened it in like a year or three, and I opened it just now because someone tweeted a link to it and said, "Hey, have you seen Twitter analytics?"
Yeah.
And so I looked at my Twitter analytics, and you know, some average stats, people are looking at things, people are retweeting things. And then my bio had 230% growth this month.
Really?
Apparently my profile is really big.
Ever since you said something about that?
Well, no, it's just, so maybe I could put that on my bio. Maybe. It's good to have a good bio.
That would work out fine. When someone, because I said before, I'm going to speak to Josh, and they said, "Oh, how do you know Josh?" And I said, "And what is the basis for this whole podcast?" I don't know, from the internet. If someone asked you how you knew me, would your answer be the same thing?
Yeah, although like I'd probably wedge in there, like we... And to be honest with you, I can't remember the exact stations that you've been at, but like, yeah, we worked in the same networks, like a bit here and there, and like I've kind of followed his career. Not that I could give you a word for word, like I'd have to look at his Wikipedia page. You've got a Wikipedia page, right?
Do I? I don't know.
You should. I haven't got one. You can't create one for yourself.
Can't you?
But yeah, well, yeah.
If you could, we both already. If you could create your own Wikipedia page, we would both have them.
Totally, because we're that kind of personality. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, now, we'll get to, like, the internet side of your business, which I guess how a lot of people would know you now from seeing stuff online about you being a marriage celebrant. But first, like, we used to work in the same radio company. You used to work in WA at one stage, which is the same network I'm in now, and a lot of people I work with used to work with you. So
there's a song that describes it really well.
Yeah, which is?
I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If you could see the miles of my Toyota Yaris, you would know how true that is. So, but how do you get from working in radio to now being a full-time marriage celebrant? Like, tell me how that sort of happened.
Well, I'll give you the kind of my working career in a really short kind of period. I dropped out of high school halfway through grade 12 because I thought that was really intelligent, because that's where all, you know, I've jumped the gun on everyone getting out of school.
Yeah,
so I worked in tech for a little bit. Just fixing computers, fixing FBOS machines, ATMs, just really bluffing my whole way through. Like, that was my whole late teens, early 20s, was just bluff, 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 which is actually how I got into radio, because I'd always loved radio. I always listened to radio. I thought radio was really cool, and I thought radio was enjoyable and just, like, a really fun thing. I had no idea how to do that.
Well, when did it occur to you that you could do radio as a living? Because when you say that, I was the same. In high school, I loved radio. I was obsessed with it. Like, I would actually come to school and go, "Oh, they did this at 7:55, but they usually do it at 7:52. Like, I was really into it. But
yeah, totally.
It seemed like such a faraway thing that only famous people did. And I think a lot of people don't realize that that's something they can legitimately choose as a career and go and do it.
Well, I didn't know that I could do it. In fact, there was a community radio station in my hometown of Mackay, and they, because I used to listen to a few of their shows, and they had a thing saying, "Hey, we need members." And I'm like, "Yeah, I can be a member." Like, it costs, I think, $30 or $40. And so I went to, me and a friend went into the station and We had our $30 in our hand and wanted to fill out a membership form because it would be really awesome to be a member of something.
Yeah.
And while we're there, they're going, hey, so you know, we've got training coming up. You could be on the radio. I'm like, I? Me?
What? Who? How?
What? I could, and I like, having worked in radio for a long time now, I know, not to diminish what any of us do, but there's, especially in community radio, like, there's space for people on air. And so I know that it's not, the gap isn't that large.
I still feel like the best radio I ever did was at Sin between 2 a.m. and The Breakfast Show.
Totally, yeah.
Student radio in Melbourne, yeah. So you did the training and you had a great time and you're like, this is awesome, I want to do it all the time?
Yeah, I did the training and then in true community radio fashion, our transmitter blew up. And so we were literally off the air while they were getting new transmitters. So they had us all in the main studio playing with the desk, like broadcasting, but the broadcast went
and training at the same time.
yeah. Well, because they just like, they're like, this is a great opportunity. Use the desk. Like, if the audio is not going anywhere,
yeah,
it gets to the control room, and that's the end of the audio. Like, the audio is not going up any sticks anywhere. And so I'm in there playing one day, and the manager comes in. You're on the air. And that's how I began my career. And so from there, I mucked around on there for a little bit. Then CFM and Mackay had a job in the Daily Mercury, the local newspaper, and it was for a broadcast engineer. And I just wanted to work in radio then. So I was put in this most bullshit application, and I feel so sorry for my manager at the time, Ali Davenport. She's a lovely girl.
Oh, really? She was my GM in Toowoomba.
Yeah, she's such a good person. And so I don't know whether she saw through the bullshit and thought that I was a good guy or whether I got her. But either way, I got a job on radio. But I was working in as the engineer.
That's so crazy. Ali's like, she was incredible, boss. That's so weird that she was the one that sort of gave you your first job.
Yeah, she's such a good chick.
So you pick up an engineering job, and obviously that's really good to get your foot in the door, but it's often not that easy to still get that on-air job. I know I used to be on the street team and didn't really like that because I thought, oh, you just got to do it to get your foot in the door. So how did you go from becoming a tech to getting to on-air?
I was in Sydney for a conference with some friends, and I got 3 phone calls within 3 days. This is literally like some fake story you hear on the internet. This is literally what happened.
Yeah.
3 phone calls in 3 days. Rod Bryce calls and goes, actually, sorry, Rod Bryce didn't call me. Matt Cummins, who was the program director in WA at that point,
yep,
he calls and said, Rod Bryce has put your name forward. Do you want to move to Esperance to do breakfast radio?
Which is a long way from Queensland, which is where you are at this point, I'm guessing.
Esperance is a long way from Esperance.
Yeah, there's not one place in Australia you can be that's close to Esperance, really. So
no, like even in Kalgoorlie, you're still 4 hours away, but a beautiful town, and if you're driving anywhere near it, you've got to detour and see it because it's amazing.
Yeah.
But he says, do you want to do that? I'm like, wow. Yes, but wow. Like, give me a second.
Yeah.
I get a phone call from a really big church in North Queensland, and they want me to be their media, you know, nerdy technology media guy. And I get a phone call from one of the guys that works with one of Australia's biggest touring names, Michael Chugg.
Yep.
And Michael Chugg wants me to head up his new live streaming department, which I don't believe has happened yet.
Okay. And what this is like, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Oh, God. 2008, 2009.
Jeez. And just think that they might have not done that streaming service going, oh, I don't feel like online music streaming isn't really going to be a thing.
Well, no, so Chugg, you had actually seen some of the stuff I've been doing, because at that time, because I was doing Bible college and I was helping the church with some like real nerdy technical things like live streaming and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And no one was doing it back then.
Yeah.
We were doing real piecemeal stuff and I was doing it on the smell of an oily rag, just being a real nerd. And he saw that and he goes, I could do this with my concerts. And so I get a job offer from Chuggy, get a job offer from the church off Queensland, get a job offer from Rod Bryce / Matt Cummins / was it Southern Cross Media then?
Southern Cross Media then. So when someone says to you the term, when it rains, it pours, you always go, no, let me tell you that story.
Yeah, and of course, as anyone that knows my story knows, I went to WA. Chuggy would have been amazing, but I just really wanted to be on the radio. And I'd been doing community radio. Like, the whole time I was an engineer at Southern Cross Media, or RG Capital, or DMG, and whatever, yep, the different names they had, I'd always been doing community radio. Like, there was one point when I was on the Gold Coast, I don't know if anyone at work ever noticed this, and if you're hearing this for the first time, I'm sorry, but I used to do breakfast radio from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., and then I'd pre-record the last 15 minutes and jump in a car and sprint to the CFM building so I can be at work by 9. So I was doing breakfast radio on the Gold Coast for a community radio station.
I once had a flight in Mildura at like 9:30, so I, from the 8:30 news, tracked up and listened to myself doing breakfast radio driving to the airport.
What's the worst voice track you've ever heard yourself do?
Oh, man. All of the above. But it's, okay. I've heard someone, just like, I describe it as like, you know when you like hear Ghost Ride the Whip?
Yeah.
Like, when you leave the station and you're still on air, you just feel like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, totally.
And so you do that every day.
Yeah, every day I pre-record the last half hour, 45 minutes, and one morning, if you know the Gold Coast, so the studios for the community radio station were at Labrador, and the CFM studios were at Southport, but they were at either end of each suburb, so it wasn't close, but it wasn't far.
Yeah.
And so I'm coming along Marine Parade, beautiful Gold Coast morning, I hear the song fade down, silence. This is the break. Hey, it's Josh here, blah, blah, blah. Oh, let's try that again. All right.
And then the break starts.
And I hadn't edited anything.
Yeah,
and it was the worst.
The funniest thing ever is hearing in an interview, I will edit that bit out, and then you're obviously hearing it and just knowing that someone's listening going, oh, shit, I forgot about that bit.
Yeah, so that happened to me. So, obviously I went to WA, did the breakfast radio thing there, and... Mike Penny that gave me the shot there, honestly, I feel like I've just continually encountered some of the best humans in radio along my whole career. And maybe everyone that works in radio is a really rad person. I've heard lots of bad stories, so I can only assume not. But I've just been so lucky through Mackay, through Gold Coast, through Esperance. And while I was in Esperance, I had so many opportunities in Albany and Kalgoorlie and Bunbury.
Yep.
And from there, I went to Port Macquarie. Once again, I feel like I've experienced some of the best deal. Like Port Macquarie, everyone in that station. Strawny, who was on 2MC, he's still there. He's been doing it for, I think, 30 years now.
Yeah.
And from there, I went to Mackay and to Cairns, and I went to Sydney to work for a radio consultancy. And the whole way, I feel like I was just so blessed. Everyone that I came in contact with, I'm like, you're the best person in radio.
So you did your time in Esperance and then in Port Macquarie, and then obviously now... You're not doing radio full-time and you're a marriage celebrant. Was that, you sort of had enough, wanted to try something different, or when did you sort of make a decision that you wanted to make the change?
So I'm a week away from my 30th birthday. And we've all had those moments where you kind of look at the week ahead on radio and you're like, oh, we could do a good story arc here. There's not much happening.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, you know what? I turned 30 on Friday. Why don't we do like, because this is a true story. I had all these things in my head that I thought that I would achieve by the time I was 30. Like I had this story, this fairy tale kind of view of like what I would achieve by the time I was 30.
And I feel like every single person has this sort of things that either A, they want to do, or B, they feel like society assumes they should have.
Yeah, totally.
By 30? Yeah.
That's a mortgage, of kids and a wife.
Yeah. I'm 27. And of the three things you just mentioned, I only have the bad one, which is the debt one. I don't have the good ones, but yeah. So
I had none.
Yes. So you were a week out, and you thought, "What are we going to do?"
I think on this week, let's in a radio jokey style, let's try and achieve that. Let's try and make Josh's dreams come true. So my co-host Stace, who's a legend, she goes, "Yeah, let's do that." And so we map out how that'll happen. So we decided to go speed dating on the air with single mum, female, obviously because mums are female, single mums that have a house.
Yep.
and we just start speed dating, we find a chick. But then another side story there is there's this chick that I've liked for so long, and because I've been talking about turning 30, I've been thinking about turning 30, I'm like, I should ring Brit and tell her that I'm really into her. And so I do. So the Sunday of that week, before the big story arc starts, I tell Brit that I love her. And we kind of start casually, you know, not like as casual as you can be when you don't live in the same city.
Is that really awkward? And I know this as from firsthand, like I've sort of been seeing a girl and then something comes up on air where you have to be the single guy and you're like, geez, I hope they don't hear this. Or like, I hope they let me explain that it's my job or something. Like, was that weird dating these single mums and also telling this girl you love her?
Yeah, Britt was cool with it. She's still a little bit jealous of the girl that I fake married on air, because on Thursday I fake married a girl on air.
Were the person you married devastated when you fake divorced them the next morning to be with Britt?
Look, I don't know where Rachel was at the time, but she was actually, she still is a lovely, like such a beautiful, like an attractive person, a beautiful person, like good heart. She had a beautiful kid. And had I not just proclaimed my love to Britt, I would have probably seriously considered taking that radio relationship to a real place. But anyway, I didn't. And also around that whole 30 period, I'm like, you know what? I've spent my 20s working my way up the radio ladder, and I don't really feel like I can get much further. And I'm still on 45K a year, which at that point I believe was a pretty good wage in radio. Maybe it's still.
Oh, this is only a few years ago though.
Yeah, yeah. This is 2000 and
can I just confirm it was not Grant Broadcasters?
It was not Grant Broadcasters.
Wow, geez, that is a surprise. Times haven't changed in a few years. That's good to say.
Yeah, so this is the end of 2011. I was on 45K and I didn't really feel like there was, even if I could get up the ladder, like I would literally be pushing people off the ladder to get up the ladder. I felt like that was the kind of stage in life I was at. I could be Ryan, but I'm going to have to kill Ryan in the meantime.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm assuming anyone who has not enough of a life to be listening to us two bang on would probably be other people in radio who, it's a similar story, and everyone has to like fight that thing every single day of, do I need money? Do I want to be happy? Will I ever not be in this small town? Like, it's a very common story. And obviously, you are probably a success story of going, taking it by the bullet and making a change.
Yeah, so from that, I quit. And I didn't really know, like, yes, I had the celebrant thing, but I didn't know that a celebrant could actually be a profitable, successful, sustainable business. So I quit, and I went back to the Gold Coast, and Britt and I started hanging out. I actually asked her to marry me. Which was fun, and then, it's obviously one of the best days of my life, she said yes.
Yeah.
But she said yes to this unemployed idiot that had no money or anything. I had barely enough money to buy her an engagement ring, and then, of course, I had no money.
Yeah.
So I had to find a job.
3 months' wage. Well, if you don't have a wage, that makes it pretty cheap.
It's $3. It's great. So I pushed around for a job, and I eventually got a job back at the old community radio station. I was out on the Gold Coast way back, and I helped them for a few weeks, and I got another engineering job.
There would have been one stage where you went, oh, hang on, I can actually be a wedding celebrant full-time and not have to do this other stuff during the week.
Yeah, totally. And that came on a Friday afternoon when I had just had enough of my boss.
Yeah.
And I called Britt and I said, I can't do this anymore. We've got this celebrant thing. We've been booking a few weddings. Do you reckon we can make a business out of it? She said yes, which for the wives listening, just so you know, your yes, your empowering yes to your husband is worth a gold bullion. Like just that, you can do it, honey. Like that's, and Britt gave me that, and she's a champion, and I'll champion her for the rest of my life because she said yes.
Without taking the risk of going, holy crap, how are we going to make money? How are we going to survive? If you just tried to build your wedding business up on the side, do you think you ever would have pushed yourself as far and made it as successful as now?
No. Because necessity is something that it's a greater fuel than, oh yeah, maybe we should. But when you need to make money.
When you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which I find so funny. We tried to go for a car loan recently, and I've only been full-time self-employed for 18 months now.
Yeah.
And I went for another car loan because, we inquired of it because we've only got one car, we share a car. And the bank says, we can't give you a loan. You've got to be self-employed for 3 years before we lend you anything. And I thought it was so funny that they'll happily employ an employed person who can get fired at the drop of the hat, but the self-employed person who is going to make this work, like, there is no way this won't work because it has to work because I don't have another thing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to measure that.
Will Anderson often talked about similar, like, you hear him say, oh, if you've got a fallback plan or a backup plan, you'll just end up falling back on it.
Yeah.
So, gee, I don't think I'd have the balls to do it. So I commend you for I couldn't just go, nah, I'm quitting my job and doing this one thing and hopefully it'll work. I don't have the courage.
Yeah, look, and the week that followed that, was one of the best weeks of my life.
Yeah, what happened?
So
Just the feeling Friday, of like, I've finally done it, I'm free, I can do whatever I want. I'm my own man.
that, but there was some real actual stuff that happened. So Friday night, I finished work, and a good friend of mine, Steve Mulk, and I, we jump on a plane, we go to Melbourne. We'd already planned this little junket to Melbourne. We're going to do some podcasting and see some comics, and it was going to be an awesome weekend. And so that was planned way before we ever were leaving work.
Yeah.
And so what a great way to leave work, go to Melbourne, have a party.
Yes, right.
We get home Monday, and first day back in the office. So, all right, let's make this business work. We start chasing up invoices, replying to inquiries, you know, all the normal stuff you do.
Yep.
And I finish off day one, great job. And just before we kind of finish work, I get an email from a journalist who's at one of the local newspapers. So not the Courier Mail, but they're a subsidiary of the Courier Mail that does a local newspaper for a local suburb.
Yep.
And they'd talked to me a couple of months, about 6 months earlier, saying, hey, we'd love to do a story, talk to us for a bit. Started a chat, and it was great. They called me that Monday afternoon and said, hey, so you know, or the quarter email, I can't remember which one, and they said, that thing you did, that's going to go live tomorrow morning on the Courier Mail website. I'm like, okay, cool, thanks. Great story.
Yep.
Doesn't mean anything to me, but thank you for letting me know.
Cool, see you later, yep.
I wake up in the morning to like 25 missed calls from every talk radio station around the country, every Channel 9 and Channel 7's breakfast shows, and from other newspapers, wanting to have a chat to this guy who I found out like half an hour later that the Courier Mail was having a really slow news day. Mm. It was the week Nelson Mandela died on the Friday of that week. It was a little bit too soon for Christmas, and Parliament had finished for the year, so it was this real rare, beautiful week where nothing was happening. And so the Courier Mail needed a story. They pulled a story from one of their local, the local newspaper I was in,
yep.
And go, oh, look, we can embellish the story a bit. And rather than just saying, look, fun celebrant, like, you know, celebrant that only does cool weddings, which was a story the world needed that day. And so thus began my massive week of media where I was on most radio stations around the country, and I was on TV and different newspapers and international people wanted to have a chat to me. And then on Friday, Nelson Mandela died and the news had something to talk about, and my run of fame finished. But that was a massive
at the time launch. Some would say that it's still going quite well.
it's trickles, but yep. That week is what I needed to launch my business.
Yeah, and just the confidence as well, I guess.
Totally.
Do you think it's ironic that you left a job in radio that, let's just say, it's a job that's in the spotlight? And I would say that you are now significantly more in the spotlight despite not having a job like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit ironic. And I'll tell you something even greater. And I don't say this to spite anyone because I know exactly what it's like.
Yep.
But everyone that I've ever known in the media, the second I kind of give them a story, it never goes anywhere. I'm talking TV, radio, newspaper, like because I've got friends right across the board. And there's been a few times like, this is a good story. I should tell someone about this story. And I tell a few friends. Goes nowhere.
I believe you have told Ryan and Rosie on Hot FM what would be a good story, and they called you and they aired.
Oh, yes, yes, you've got me there. You have done that.
That makes one.
That makes one. But generally, my success on the media has been from talking openly and honestly about what I do.
Yep.
And hoping that someone sees it. And that's what's happened. I've been on Breakfast Radio, I've been on Channel 9, Today Show's Breakfast twice, Sunrise once. I've been in the Daily Mail in the UK, bunch of American blogs, UK blogs, all over the radio, and I'm really lucky that A, I'm doing something that people would consider worth remarking on. They would call it remarkable, and I'm doing something that other people actually give a shit about, which is, you know, obviously I've decided to do that, but I'm lucky that people do give a shit about what I do. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, a lot of people in regional radio think, and I guess I'm one of them, that, you know, you do time in regional radio and you might one day maybe move on to a bigger market and in the metro, and, you know, you've got more resources, you can make a bigger and better show, it'll be fantastic, and you've got to do your time out here in the sticks. Do you think it's strange that I'd say there's no reason why you couldn't get a bigger radio job on the back of you being the wedding guy over me having done my time in regional? Do you think it's strange that you quit radio because you couldn't think you'd get any further and maybe... your fame and expertise in this industry could get you that job down the track somehow, some way?
Yeah, look, the media industry is a very different place to where it was when I began. Whereas when I began in the radio industry, like in 2002 or 2003, it was all about, look, this is a profession and we are radio people and we all take in people. You will join our club, and we will be on the radio, or we'll be on the TV, or we will be on the newspaper. We are the media. Come and join the media. And that was that way for a long time.
Yep.
But over the course of my career, and definitely at the end of it, that stopped being an exclusive club. And if you are someone with a personality, if you are someone that had the opportunity or had the ability to communicate, and to communicate in a way that other people would listen and give a shit about, then you could be the media. And I've done that on my own blog, I've done that on social media, and now I'm doing that back on mainstream media.
Yeah, and I despite a person with no real other interests or expertise or anything, I would agree with what you said. It's so often now that you'll see TV shows and radio shows which are a combination of, oh yeah, it's that guy that did that thing, and then there's that blogger from there, and that wedding expert, and blah blah blah, and it could all just come together quite nicely and be a great show.
Well, because that's always what media has been, but we kind of we like it to have an industry. We like to have like, man, we are the media. Let us do the media. But everyone does the media now.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to the like radio announcer thing. Could you imagine like radio announcers talking about what they really do all day on air? Like, oh, so I was sitting in the second studio just editing this interview down, and this really funny thing happened. And you're like, I don't care, mate. Like, I'd rather hear a funny story from you about something that happened at a wedding on the weekend than, I don't know, like, there's no reason why I wouldn't want to hear that.
All right, wait for it. Coming up after the break, that time OW Edition fucked over my life. Star FM.
Coming up next, I'll continue to not pretend to not care that Big Brother guy got a job.
Oh, yeah. Come on next. Went for a raise last week. Manager said no for the 40th time this year.
With the success of your, when you say fun weddings, and I'd tell me if I'm wrong, but this is how I would describe it to someone else. I'd say Josh does personalized weddings for couples who know what they want rather than people doing what they think they're supposed to do because everyone else does that.
Yeah, that's not a bad description. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and maybe because I'm like a wannabe rebel, but I love the idea of, well, just because society has always done it and assumes that that's how I do it, I don't care. I want to do what I want to do. And I feel like your weddings kind of fit that bill.
Yeah, totally. There's a blog post on my screen at the moment that I'm kind of drafting, and I want to say something about how nerd weddings are the best weddings, not because of the nerd element, but because nerds are some of the best people on the planet in that they are just cool. They're just comfortable with who they are. They're like, I am this guy or this girl.
Yeah.
This is who I am. And as a result, their weddings are the coolest because they're really comfortable about who they are, and their weddings represent that.
Yeah.
Like, their weddings are their weddings.
Yeah.
So it's not about nerdery. It's not about Star Wars, or it's not about any of that stuff. It's just about this real confident nature. Like, this is who I am. And they're the best wedding. The best weddings are when people are like, yeah, I am this guy or girl. We are this couple, and we're cool with that. And we want our wedding to be us. Whereas weddings of past have very much been a keep up with the Joneses, or like, well, this is the wedding you've got to have. Even in our wedding, my mother-in-law, she said, you've got to have a cake. We're like, well, we don't hate cake, but we don't need a cake. Like, why? Like, we're not going to get a cake. We don't need a cake.
Yeah.
She bought a cake for us. So,
yeah, and I'm not just pissing in your pocket when I say this, but for me, the concept of being married to someone is fine. Like, I would love to get married one day and blah, blah, blah. But the concept for me of a wedding just makes me cringe. And it's because of those things in, like, I hate wearing suits, so I don't want to stand in front of people wearing a suit because, like, that's not what I do. I'm not religious at all. So for me to, A, be in a church and to think I'd have to pay them money to, like, give them my money to rent their space, I'm just like, nah, there's so many things that makes me feel uncomfortable. But then I see stuff like this and I go, oh, no, I reckon I could do that.
Can I tell you the reason we wear suits at a wedding is because the people that wear suits like to wear suits. And if you don't like to wear suits, don't wear
a suit. I earned so much more money than I still do now working in finance. And if I was comfortable in a suit, I would still be quite happily working in Melbourne in finance. But I like wearing T-shirts, so now I don't have much money and work in
But all of the elements about traditional weddings aren't terrible and evil. But they've all just come around because a certain segment of the population found that to be a true celebration of who they are, and that just turned out to be like, oh well, you know, we wear suits, we have cake, we have some drinks, we have an afternoon ceremony, and we have a photo shoot, and then we have a party at night, and we say we'll be together till death do us part. Now that's not bad. It's not evil. It's not terrible.
Yeah, but it's just not a lot of people. It's not me.
It's true. And it's okay to have your own wedding. Like, Australian law is actually one of the most liberal marriage laws in the world. Ironically, we don't let people of the same gender marry. But in every other segment of the marriage world, it's so liberal. Because it just says, look, marriage is just two people hanging out together in a union. They're just doing this thing called life together instead of doing life apart. And a wedding is just a celebration of that. And, you know, I was actually thinking the other day about how it's so funny that, and if you're a photographer friend of mine listening to this, please don't hate me and just get all pissed off. But I think it's so funny that that it's totally a thing that you would have a wedding ceremony and then bugger off for a couple of hours for a photo shoot and come back and get drunk. Like,
cause yeah, what are we supposed to do when you're gone?
Yeah, well, there's so many elements to that because, look, having a photo shoot's actually a lot of fun. If you've never had a professional photo shoot, I highly recommend putting $1,000 aside or whatever it might cost and getting a photo shoot. It's actually really cool to get some really hot photos of
yourself. Are you just saying this because you feel bad about saying the thing about the photographers and maybe you want to keep them employed at places other than weddings?
but seriously, it is actually really cool to get a good photo shoot. But there's no reason you should add so much stress to your wedding day that that's what you have to do. But then if you want to do it, because I'm not your boss.
Yeah, do what you want. Now, obviously this style is quite popular, like obviously the success of your personal business and the fact that, you know, the TV stations, newspapers, radios want to quote you is because this whole concept, it's a great idea. It's fantastic. So two questions on that. One, do you think it's strange that no one else really thought of this before? And B, are other people starting to do that? Or do you still feel like you've got this little niche cornered?
In no way was I the first. There were definitely some people.
Were you the loudest first one?
I was the clinging pot. I was that idiot that everyone hated.
But you claimed. I've been doing it for ages. Yeah, but I'm on the radio, so you'll shut your mouth.
Well, you know what's funny? So many of my peers, the people that are of a similar age and a similar kind of vintage to me in the celebrant industry, most of them that I've found, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say all of them, have been a celebrant slightly or a lot less time than me. So many of them are like same year, many of them are like 1 year later, many of them are like in the last 12 months. And so I feel that there was this real moment, there was this real late 2000s moment where a lot of us were going to weddings and just walking out saying, what the fuck happened there?
Yeah.
That was weird. and
hello to my older stepbrothers and sisters who all got married in that time period.
Yeah, and we all kind of saw like these celebrants. I'm like, what are you rattling on about? Like, well, like, and then all there's so many technical attributes. So there's not having a good PA system or just not dressing well or just forgetting people's names and all of that kind of stuff. And I feel like there was this time where so many of us went to those weddings and people like me said, you know what, I could do something about it. And I can't claim to be the first. Maybe I was the first loudest, but since then, many have stepped up. And I'm lucky that when I'm booked out, there's many people I can refer to. There's many people that refer to me. And there's a growing crowd of celebrants. I can tell you that in the last 3 years, around 3,500 celebrants have dropped off. They've retired as celebrants.
Yeah.
And annually, there's about 300 people becoming celebrants. So there's a real freshness in the celebrant community. And that's a challenge for me because, like I was saying earlier, like this has to work for me. So I need to continue to innovate. I need to continue to work my ass off to make sure that I don't lose my standing and keep on making money because I like to pay rent and have food.
Yeah, now I don't know if this is a tough question to answer or B, one that you might not want to answer on, which is fine. But I guess with your business...
10 inches. It's 10 inches. 10 inches long.
I guess with your business, you can only, like, because you are your own business. You can only be marrying two people at any one time at once. You can't just make more of you in a factory in China and sell it online. There will be a point where you can no longer make any more money. Or is that not correct?
Look, people are always getting married. Every year in Australia.
But I mean, like, on any given Saturday, you can only be standing with two people there at one time. You can't do 1,000 weddings, separate weddings in one day. Or can you?
No. So on any given Saturday, I'm probably doing 2 to 3 weddings. Like, there's not many Saturdays go past that I'm not doing more than two. Like, I'm doing at least 2 weddings a Saturday.
Okay.
But a big part of my business is encouraging people. And look, there's a selfish component to this, and there's a selfless component to this.
Yep.
Just encouraging people to say, look, Saturday isn't the only day of the week to have a wedding.
I was going to say, if you're busy on a Saturday, start encouraging midweek weddings.
Yeah, totally. And so I can tell you now that probably about half of my weddings are not Saturday weddings.
Okay.
In the last fortnight, I've done a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, a Friday, and a Sunday in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, if you're getting enough weddings, then you're always going to be fine. Because, I mean, it's still sort of the same question in that because you are your own product, you can only be in one place at one time. There's going to be a cap. You're going to hit a peak where you can't earn anymore.
Yeah, and look, I haven't really talked about this too publicly, but I'm currently trying to feel out what it looks like to grow what we call a multi-op celebrant business. So in other fields, like in DJing or in photography, they have multi-op businesses. So that's where it starts being Jimbo's photography business, and it starts being, you know, photography by Jimbo and Co. or whatever name it comes up with. And he has many people. He has more than one person. And so we call them multi-op. There's single-op, which is just Josh, and there's multi-op, which is Josh and his team. And in so many other industries, that's really acceptable. Because as a DJ, you're like, well, look, as long as you know how to press play on iTunes,
as long as you know where Eagle Rock comes from when everyone's had a few cans, it'll be fine.
Yeah, and look, obviously and I don't at all want to diminish people in those industries because, yes, I'm not intending to save myself. There's a massive skill in DJing and emceeing, and there's a massive skill in photography. And for people to change from single lot to multi-lot, like, it's a lot of work. I've got a number of friends doing it right now.
Yep.
But it's much more okay. Like, there has been a path tread before for those people to walk down.
Yeah, well, if I hired you, Josh Withers, to marry me and my wife, and you sent some other bloke, I'd be asking questions.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And so I'm currently trying to figure out how to go multi-op. Because there's no one for me to copy. There's no one for me to ask, hey, how do you do this? And in so many things in my wedding business, I've been copied endlessly. And our pop-up weddings is one of those. And so many other businesses that have been copied. And so I know the second I do it, everyone's going to be like, I'll do it this way. And what no one realizes is that for me to go multi-op, like, I've been thinking about it for a year. And I've been asking people, and me and my wife have been talking about it. I've been, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so when it happens, and you'll see me tweet about it or Facebook about it, because I'm very open and very transparent with my business.
Yeah.
Know at that point that it has been many late nights sleep, and within hours, some other lovely, lovely, generous person will copy me, and it'll be so easy for them. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that right now, and hopefully by the end of the year, there's already two guys I'm talking to. Hopefully by the end of the year, I can launch, and I'll be a multi-op celebrant business.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm very intrigued and, like, fascinated to see how that works because, like I said, you're doing a bloody good job and like, you want to keep paying your rent.
And look, I don't ever think that, look, as much as it's lovely that people might want to know me and people might want to have me at their wedding, and that'll never stop being a novelty for me. That is such an honor. It's equally a novelty and equally an honor. Like, it's a novelty. Like, really, you want me to come to your wedding? Have you asked the other 8,000 guys?
Yeah, well, I think I talked to you. We had you on my radio show when I got asked to MC a wedding, and I remember telling you that they were like, "Oh, if you don't want to, you don't have to," and, you know, it'll be fine. And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, I feel so honored right now. Like, I'd love to. Like, it's such a honor to be asked."
Yeah, and so as much as, like, it totally is an honor, it's also like a novelty, but I don't ever think that I can't be the only celebrant. So I figure if there's going to be other celebrants, maybe I can A, help them, maybe I can B, mentor them, maybe I can C, train them, maybe D, I can hire them, and I can still make a buck. Because I can tell you, last year in my business, I turned away, hopefully everyone's sitting down, because I'll tell you that I charged $1,200 per wedding, and I turned away 570 inquiries.
Whoa. And here I was this morning not getting soy milk because I couldn't afford the extra 50 cents and feeling sick all day.
I will mail you the 50 cents if you want, man.
I know you're joking, but I kind of want it.
and look, I say that not because I want to boast, because I am not a rich man, but that's just that's the nature of the business.
Yep.
And I'm sure if I hired two guys, I'd still be turning away maybe only 370 as opposed to 500. I don't know. But it's just the nature of the beast, and it's the nature of the game. And so, and even though I charge $1,200, I'm probably at that price. I would assume that I'm the most expensive celebrant in Australia. But what most people don't realise is that I'm running a full-time business. I've got two staff already helping with administrative stuff, and so I'm actually poorer than I was when I was charging a lot less. But it costs money to run a really good business. And right now, I'd hope that everyone, every single human listening, would think about that person they know that is, that's in business full-time, and they would just think of them, and they would just hug them, and they would just love on them and buy them a Mars bar.
It's great that, like, hiring those people, thinking about the multi-op, like, it's obviously all an investment to later. Like, you can't, totally. You're just spending more money because prices are up. Like, it's an investment, right?
Oh, yeah. It's all long-term with business. You know, anyone that's doing anything short-term in business is not a wise person. And, you know, stop thinking about weddings for a second. Start thinking about Apple devices, for example. Mm-hmm. And people see the Apple Watch. And so this, you know, this week you can go and buy an Apple Watch. You can have an Apple Watch and you're like, oh, this is terrible. But think about the last... It's literally the last 15 years of there's been engineers working on that, and they started working on an iPad, which turned into an iPhone, and then from the iPhone, obviously, they went further and further and further, and then a few weeks after Steve Jobs died, after all of that, they said, you know what, we actually really like watches, and let's try and make a watch, and so there's 15, well, and more than 15 years, coming up to 50 years of this groundswell that has led to you having this little watch on your wrist. You're like, oh, this is shit. but that's business, because it's a long-term game, and nothing in business, or nothing good in business, ever happens at a flick of a switch. There's always thought and budgeting and, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
it's really boring.
We could go down the small business angle and chat for hours and hours, but I feel like that's a different topic on its own, and like you said, it goes on forever. And me personally, like, I have an honours degree in finance and used to consult small businesses, so I would find it fascinating, but I feel like other people wouldn't. Do you think that's fair? Yeah, cool. All right, well, I think we'll wrap that up there, Josh. That was very interesting. I guess one last question, and I guess we've kind of touched on it before. With all the stuff that you're doing, not necessarily in the content business, do you still love just making the blogs because you just love making content for online?
Oh, yeah, man. Like,
it's obviously promotion, but it's still, like, at the end of the day, sometimes it's just fun to write it.
Yeah, totally. There's nothing better, and for all of my breakfast radio, or just forget breakfast radio, for all of my radio comrades listening, there's nothing better than opening your mouth and gibberishing on the air, at which point someone would call a phone number and the little red light on whatever machine would light up. And you're like, oh my God, someone's listening. And I remember for my whole career, I always imagined that there was no more than like two or three people listening. Like, there is no way that more than two or three people could be listening to me. And I remember when I saw tracking one day, and they're like, yeah, 45,000 people listening. I'm like, no, they're not. You're buggering me. There's no one. 45,000 people aren't listening.
Yeah, it's scary. I remember going to a gig, to a music concert, and there was 20,000 people watching or whoever it was, like Groove in the Moo or something. And I was like, oh man, I could never perform in front of this many people. I'd be terrified. And someone's like, well, you have five times that every day. Like,
yeah. So I still love making that content. I had the opportunity to MC a music festival the other day with
Oh, cool.
I'm led to believe there was like 5,000 people there, and it was the best. And I'm like, wow, I miss this. And I really do miss radio. I miss doing that content thing. And obviously, I do it in some way with what I'm already doing. But I miss radio. I don't miss the business of radio.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Harvey Norman's got a sale on this weekend.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
Super Saturday. I'm guessing it's cheap for them, but not for society.
Those poor items.
Is that sound accurate, though?
Yeah. I used to spend every weekend at the Good Guys, and the worst, oh, not the worst thing, I don't know. There were good people down there, but they weren't even giving me specials. I don't know. I said, we need a tea.
Do you know who I am? I'm Josh from Star FM, mate. And if you think I'm paying full charge for a USB, you're fucking kidding yourself.
God, I am so glad not to be in the business of radio anymore. I've got a lot of friends that are podcasters, and you included now. And I really believe that podcasting has got such a beautiful future. But the linchpin is when someone figures out how to make or someone in Australia figures out how to make a wage from it, because there's a few American people, but from what I understand, there's not many Australians making a wage directly from podcasting. There's Will Anderson, but he fills, you know, he fills concert halls.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how it's going to work out either. Maybe we'll do another podcast on the concept of podcast, because if something's called From the Internet, surely that's within the context of this whole thing, right?
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, cool. All right, Josh, thank you very much for your time.
Always a pleasure.